Welcome back here to 560 WQAM, and welcome to the 9 o'clock hour. Greg Likens here with you. We're going to take you up until 10 o'clock. That's when we'll turn things over to CBS Sports Radio. Dan Day with me as well. You just heard him there on the headlines, the sports update, as Marlins right now hoping to get out of a jam. The bases are loaded. As you heard, the score is 2-1. Right now, the Cardinals have the bases loaded with two outs. So we'll see what happens here, as this is a tenuous time in this contest. Want to let everybody know that we got a lot to get into here. I want to talk some more NBA Finals. If you want to text the show, you can. 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, as always. But let's get into what really overshadowed last night's contest. And yes, the Warriors extended the series. There'll be a game six on Thursday night with the 106-105 victory. But as Dan mentioned in the headlines, this Kevin Durant story is really the one that has taken over. It is being reported this evening that Kevin Durant flew to New York City today and was going to undergo an MRI on the injured Achilles in New York City. I think he was going to see a foot specialist there that can help with that, because the Warriors went back to Oakland and Durant was going to New York City. So, you know, there was no media availability. This being a travel day, I would assume we'll have an official update tomorrow, though, as has been pointed out multiple times, that ESPN, courtesy of Ramona Shelburne and Adrian Wojnarowski, reported that the team believes the MRI will confirm an Achilles tear that was suffered by Durant. So while we're on the topic of Kevin Durant's injury, you know, it's really a sad development, to be sure. You feel terrible for him because he looked great early on. I mean, if you watch the video from pregame warmups, and then, you know, he was doing a dance routine in the tunnel, getting ready for the game, like I guess he customarily does. And at one point during the game, he was undercut by Serge Ibaka, bounced right up and looked great. And so he then started the game sinking shots from all over the floor, including 3 3-pointers, and for 12 minutes was the best player on the floor. Had 11 points, and the Warriors looked absolutely rejuvenated. They looked terrific. And so, with all that being said, you have to give him a ton of credit for attempting to play and playing the minutes that he did in this game. But it appears this was an extremely costly decision by Kevin Durant. Now, he sacrificed his health for the team, to be sure. And you know, if he hadn't played last night or at all in this series, there were going to be plenty of doubters and people ready to criticize him for not attempting to play in the NBA Finals. And again, this isn't, you know, a playoff series earlier in the postseason. This isn't a regular season occurrence. This is the ultimate. The NBA Finals doesn't get bigger than this, so you can understand why there may be some criticism. But as we learned, there was obviously a chance of not only re-injuring himself, but also escalating that injury. However, according to Rachel Nichols, who spoke to Steve Kerr after the game, he continued to tell her that doctors had told him, and I'm sure Kevin Durant and Bob Myers and everybody involved in the Warriors situation and decision-making group, that they couldn't make the injury worse if he played. Like, that's what Steve Kerr kept saying. Doctors said that Durant couldn't make the injury worse by playing. And then that's exactly what he did. Now, Jason Williams, who's on ESPN and is connected to Kevin Durant because they have the ESPN Plus show. I haven't watched it, but that boardroom show that the two of them collaborate on, he's in Durant's camp and said that there's a strong, solid relationship between Durant's camp and the Warriors, but the target all along from the perspective of Durant and his people was a potential return in Game 5 or Game 6 of the NBA Finals after he had the initial injury. And the narrative, according to Jason Williams, has been poorly managed by the Warriors. Golden State allowing his potential return to linger out there game by game, day by day, caused, quote, a lot of this chaos for narratives to be ran away with, end quote. And those narratives include, is KD committed to his teammates? Is he only thinking about himself and his impending free agency? You also had the scenario where Joe Lacob, the majority owner, definitively said with an appearance with Stephen A. Smith that KD would be back at some point during the series. It adds extra pressure on Kevin Durant to return. Then there are these reports out there in recent days that his teammates were growing tired and tense about the fact that he hadn't returned yet and that some of them are playing through injuries and that he's not playing through an injury. Whether you believe that completely or not, you know, is certainly up to everybody else. But it's clear that Durant wanted to play and worked his butt off to get to a point where he was able to be cleared medically. But this whole thing, according to Jason Williams, felt rushed. And if that's what he is hearing after he said on the air this morning he spent time in Kevin Durant's hotel room after the injury occurred, then you know that's what the message is coming from Kevin Durant's camp, that this whole thing felt rushed. And so with that being said, we always want someone to blame. And Charles Barkley absolutely decided he was going to take aim at an entity in this situation. He was on Get Up this morning on ESPN with Mike Greenberg. This is Charles Barkley and what he had to say about this situation.
Oh, Green, I want to address something else before I answer your question.
Yeah.
You've been asking these guys all morning if there's somebody to blame.
Yes.
Yes, there is somebody to blame. The Golden State Warriors for putting KD out there. Listen, that was not right. You know, if you go back and look at the last 2 weeks, the article comes out, KD's worst nightmare, the Warriors are winning without him. Then you come out, you read the articles, the Warriors are really unhappy when KD won't risk his Achilles. They're frustrated with KD. Now this man has to be feeling some type of weight. So I blame the Warriors for KD getting hurt, and I don't care what they say about it. They shouldn't have put that man out there. And you know how I know it? Because he blew out his Achilles.
There it is. Charles Barkley, never at a shortage of opinions, and certainly he stated his pretty clearly right there. You know, I don't think that it's all in the Warriors, me personally. You can make an argument just in general that a team, the team medical staff, the coach, has to protect the player from himself. We hear that a lot. It's a bit of a cliche, but you hear that about these guys who, you know, either get caught up in the moment, the adrenaline kicks in, whatever the situation may be, or they're so dedicated to the team and they are so locked in with what the team is trying to accomplish that they will overlook their long-term health for the short-term possibilities, and it could be costly to them. And sometimes you have to say, hey, listen, this isn't worth it. Big picture, you know, for your health, we need to keep you out. So that's what Barkley's getting at. At the same time, you know, if we play along with this narrative, I will say that it was surprising to hear before the game that there was no minutes restriction. We got that text earlier. Why was Durant jumping, you know, the jump ball to start the game? That doesn't make sense, pushing off on that calf/Achilles. Brian Windhorst reported after the game that very few people he spoke to prior to the game felt it was a good idea for Durant to play last night. These are former players, people connected. There's a lot of people who are involved in the league who are at these NBA Finals games. And then I thought Jalen Rose brought up a very interesting point and pointed to a dichotomy between the two teams and really between the two teams' stars. And the best player in each team, certainly Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi Leonard, he had his rift with the Spurs. And it was essentially with the Spurs training staff. They cleared him to play, and he didn't feel ready to play. And on top of that, you had Greg Popovich kind of pressuring him through the media. Tony Parker was a prominent name that even came out and said, hey, we both had the same injury. Mine was more severe, and I'm already back playing. So you had all this stuff being said, and Kawhi Leonard decided, hey, I'm not ready to play. I'm not going to play. And then ultimately forced his way out of town. Kevin Durant, not apples to apples, but Kevin Durant in this case, you know, who's he talking to? He's trusting the medical staff there. He's trusting the trainers. He's trusting the coach, Bob Myers, who's the head of the organization on the basketball side. He trusted them, and then we see what happens. And so that may be oversimplifying things. That may be trying to draw a connection that isn't there, but Dan, this is the way I look at it. Kevin Durant, one of the criticisms that I've had of him, there's no denying his transcendent talent, but he is overly sensitive. And so that has come up as a topic when he is responding to teenagers who are criticizing him on social media. That's become a topic when we find out that he has a burner account or multiple burner accounts that he utilizes to comment to people and defend himself. That has been brought up when he just gets upset at the media when he has normal press conferences and doesn't like something that's been written. So to me, this is more about Kevin Durant bought into all the narratives that were out there about why he wasn't playing. And so I think there's a portion of this in which he is just a prideful, good teammate that wants to be back out there for his team and hates not being involved. And you know what? I think that's a lot of it. But I also think there was a lot of pressure that he felt, whether he should listen to it or not is another thing, but he felt, I think, because of his pride, but also because there's a couple of narratives out there about him not caring about his teammates to the point where he cared more about his long-term future and his status as a free agent coming up in the summer, but then also that narrative that was out there that the team was better off without him and they're playing better basketball. So I think he bought into all of that and decided to play, and it ends up being the wrong decision. Whereas you can make the argument, Dan, and again, it wasn't the finals, so it's not a direct comparison, that Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio said, hey, I don't feel right. I'm not going to play. You pressure me to do it. I don't want to play here anymore. And it's fascinating to know that these two are two of the key cogs in this NBA Finals and certainly part of this whole narrative.
I'm starting to put more and more blame on the Golden State Warriors, because think about this. In these very same finals, you would have to argue this point that Boogie Cousins had maybe less of an injury than Kevin Durant did. Kevin Durant comes back last night, no minute restrictions. When Boogie came back, didn't he have minute restrictions and wasn't there all types of things? He only played something like 10 minutes. They wanted to make sure that he was okay.
That was, yes, that's what they had said. And then, like we were talking about before, sometimes these minutes restrictions, if they look fine, they feel fine, they'll let them push the limits a little bit. But, you know, you don't usually hear about a guy coming back in his first game and not having any restrictions.
None. When it could be a very serious injury, after they even said that they knew he was not going to be probably back till game 5 or game 6.
Right. So a lot of this doesn't add up, right? I mean, just, again, part of this is playing the result to a certain degree because, I mean, hypothetically, again, I'm no medical expert, but hypothetically, the doctors could say, hey, there's like a 2% chance that you could tear your Achilles, but other than that, the worst you can do is hurt your calf to the point where it's like what it was 4 weeks ago. And so at that point, I'm sure Durant's like, all right, I'll take my chances. Maybe that's all it is. And he had that information, and he was the one ultimately decided to play. We don't know. I hope we get more of an explanation. But this is kind of the way that this all works, is that people are going to point fingers, going to try to assess where the blame lies, right or wrong, because that's kind of the way things work. I will say this, though. Look, over the last 5 years, with Kevin Durant, the Warriors in the NBA Finals are 9-1. Without him, they're 8-9. Tells you a lot right there.
Maybe an organization want him back, playing as much as he possibly can to win.
Well, I can understand those who would be skeptical about this or who are cynical about it, who would say, hey, we think he's got to leave in free agency anyway. So why not get a little bit more out of him while we can, right? So there's certainly that thought process. There's also the thought process of, hey, maybe if he comes back and wins with us and we win 3 in a row, he'll want to stick around. Some cynics have said that Bob Myers last night started his free agency pitch to Kevin Durant. So who knows? But we are getting some texts that are rolling in. 560-22 Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. We'll come back and read those. Also, I don't know how many people in our audience were involved in this, but I think a lot of us missed out on a terrific opportunity that a local establishment had as a tie-in to the Women's World Cup match today for Team USA. I'll explain that and give you the details next here on QAM. Radio.com. Radio.com. We're back here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens here with you. got an update in the Marlins game as they're now losing 3-1 in the top of the seventh inning as there was a bases-loaded walk. But they got out of it after that, but still, bases-loaded walk. So it's now 3-1, St. Louis over Miami in the top of the seventh. We'll keep you updated on any other scoring that takes place there. In the meantime, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can via the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line, 560-22, 560-22. Myself, Dan Day, taking up until 10 o'clock here this evening.
Did you see someone who wrote something about Dave Grohl? And
I see that. So
lo and behold, you hear some Foo Fighters.
There you, Dan is all over it. So somebody said, hey, you mean Dave Grohl isn't the hottest man alive? Question mark. In reference to lead singers, perhaps, you know, getting all the ladies. Now, Dave Grohl, I would agree, maybe not the hottest man alive. Very talented. And he's married, though, too. But, you know, I would assume that he is in a faithful marriage. I have no idea. But all I know is I like their music. That's for sure. Okay, we have a text here that says, Charles Barkley playing the results again. Well, another texter says, what if Kevin Durant trusted the way his body felt? That same texter goes on to say, part of this is playing the results. This is all about playing the results. If Kevin Durant played the entire game and had 38 points, the Warriors would have been questioned why they didn't put him in earlier. Well, that's the thought that crossed my mind like 5 or 6 minutes into the first half, of the first quarter. I was like, man, Kevin Durant looks like he hasn't missed a beat. Like he's knocking down three-pointers. He is lifted this team. Everybody looks like they're like in much better spirits. The momentum is with the Warriors. And so I'm guilty of that as well. Like as that was going on, I thought, how come we haven't seen Durant earlier if this is what he's capable of doing?
I was part of that team that Kevin Durant was sitting behind a big plate glass window and a big hatchet saying, in case of emergency, break glass. Uh-oh, we're down 3-1. Let's go ahead, break the glass. Let's get him out and take care of this series. I thought so. I was wrong.
Well, and, you know, one of the other moments in this series up to this point that, you know, I'm still questioning as to whether this was the intelligent move, whether, you know, and maybe I'm playing the results too, but, you know, Klay Thompson sits out game three and then comes back in game four and has like 28 points and, you know, looked fine. And so since then, is like we haven't talked about his hamstring injury since then, right? That's been an afterthought, yet he missed a game. Because it almost felt like, to your point, Danny, you're talking about like, you know, break glass in an emergency. It almost felt like the Warriors like, hey, you know what? We can give up a game here. We don't need to have him in the lineup. And Durant's coming back too. So we got all this kind of in our back pocket. It's been a really, really strange, strange series, but entertaining. And the drama and the up and down nature, it has been just what the NBA would have hoped for in terms of entertainment value. Okay. One of our other texters says, KD is about being selfless and helping his team, unlike sports media guys like you, Likens, who are about themselves and their bank account. Oh, man, I can tell you if my bank account looked like Kevin Durant's, then, you know, I'd have a different perspective on the world. That's for sure. Probably wouldn't be here right now. another texter says, Warriors medical staff should have shut down KD for the rest of the year before rushing him back. You know, again, this is tough to say because Durant was always going to try to make his way back if possible. And had he sustained an Achilles injury, the answer would have been made for him, or the decision would have been made for him. But in this case, where it's not a serious injury, but one that's going to keep you out, say, up to 4 or 5 weeks, and it's right there blurring the lines between when he can return and when he can't, of course, everything exacerbated by the fact that you're losing 3-1. Yeah, it's that's the combination right there. Our buddy Rick and Davey says, hey, Greg, tell Dan the best bands or groups from Canada are Rush, Loverboy, or Triumph.
No arguments on that. Those are some great Canadian bands. You also don't want to forget about the Tragically Hip, stuff like that. 3 Days Grace, another great Canadian band. Canada's got some heat when it comes to the rock music, at least.
Yeah, and I know you've been nice to me about this, Dan. You've been nice, which I appreciate, but I'm a big Nickelback fan, I like Our Lady of Peace as well.
Hey, Our Lady of Peace, Superman's dead.
Yeah, so, you know.
I just don't have any Nickelback music to play. Sorry, Greg.
No problem. We'll spare the audience since that seems to be the popular thing to do is criticize them. All right, so I guess we all missed out on this. And certainly I wasn't going to partake because I had to come into work. Dan, the same way. We're professionals around here. However, anybody who did enjoy this may not be able to listen to us. They may have already passed out. And what am I talking about? Well, a local bar slash establishment has now been making its name in the news because of what transpired with the U.S. women's soccer team today. So American Social in Miami tweeted out that they were having a watch party today for the match. And as part of the watch party, they tweeted out all these different drink specials and different things that they have. And, the American Outlaws, which is like the official fan group of both the U.S. women's and men's national teams for soccer, they were going to be, this was kind of like the watch party for the locals here in South Florida who are part of American Outlaws. Or even if you're not, then you can go watch the match. Well, the bar, which is located in Brickell, for those who haven't been there before, had a ton of promotions. However, the most notable is that they were providing, and they announced this prior to the match, free shots for every United States goal.
Oh, I thought you were going to say free beer, and then you took it to the next level. A free shot.
So for anybody who's there, if the U.S. scores a goal, you get a free shot. And for those who are just tuning in, aren't aware, the U.S. women scored not one, not two, not three. Not four. I'm going to fast forward to 13 goals because they set a record. It was the most goals scored ever in a World Cup match. Alex Morgan had a record-setting 5 goals. 7 different players scored a goal for the U.S. women as they won 13-0 over Thailand. So the 13-goal performance, certainly unprecedented. And at one point in the second half, the U.S. had such a scoring flurry that they had 4 goals in 6 minutes.
Oh.
So you can imagine being at this bar and getting the free shots. Nobody's going to turn down the free shot.
No, never.
But at the same time, you're doing like 4 shots in the span of 6 minutes. And if you're there the entire time, 13 shots in a 2-hour span, I don't care how big you are. I don't care how well you can handle your liquor. I mean, that doesn't sound healthy for anybody.
There's just no way. You got to black out when you do those four shots in 6 minutes.
I mean,
if you even make it to remembering 13, someone has alcohol poisoning tonight, no matter what. But if you remember taking shot 13, you've got a hollow leg already.
Right. So, I mean, this was the ultimate chance to get drunk on behalf of U.S. women's soccer and, of course, American Social. But that's why I said that I'm not sure if anybody who is there for that is even awake to listen to us right now, right?
No way.
I mean, you have to be a real trooper if you're still awake and survive the 13 shots.
Are you passed out, threw up, woke up, and now you're back up trying to get water in your system or something? Food, bread, water, something.
Right.
But I will take that. You just took 13 shots. You passed out. You've thrown up. You're waking up. You're drinking water, eating bread, and you're listening to Greg Likens and Dan Day right now.
I mean, that is some dedication right there, right? Holy cow. So how about that? I see this is the tweet, American Social Brickell. These were the deals that they had. $15 Bud and Bud Light buckets, $20 Heineken / Dos Equis buckets, $3 tequila shots, $5 Jameson, $6 Guinness, 20% off regularly priced food and drinks for paid American Outlaw members. And by the way, free shot for every U.S. goal. Man, they had no idea what they were getting themselves into.
I can't even imagine. Yeah, you never think a game's going to go 13-0 or a team's going to score 13.
It's never happened before.
Yeah. You got to figure, okay, they're gonna wax the floor with them. We might have to give out 6 free shots,
right,
or something like that.
And six shots over the course of 2 hours for people, I mean, that's manageable.
And they buy food, they buy drinks. It's a good promotion.
It is.
You're starting to maybe lose money at that 13-shot point.
I was going
to
say, the Miami Herald article on it says no word on whether they've ran out of alcohol during the match. The match only lasts 2 hours, right? Can you imagine? Oh, my gosh. One of our texters says, with Durant being done for the rest of next year, guaranteed he re-signs with the Warriors. Too bad for the Knicks losers. Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. I'm sure over the next couple of days, I'm going to be back on Thursday night as, you know, of course, Thursday night will be game six. So I'll be on from 6 to 10 here on 560 WQAM. I'm sure a lot of the conversation will be previewing the game, but also talking about the free agent possibilities for Kevin Durant and what this injury does mean. Hopefully we'll have more of an idea of exactly the severity of the injury, you know, from the team, something official by that time. But, man, somebody says, I heard about that. I'm sure the bar had some sort of regulation just due to legal issues, but still a great promo. Yeah, I don't know how that works. But, yeah, you're right. That could be deemed irresponsible to feed 13 shots to everybody. But still, I would say that everybody drank as much as they would have hoped to drink going into it just based on that promotion.
If you wanted more, you might have a problem.
Oh, man. Wholeheartedly agree. Somebody says we need to start a Jurassic Park in South Florida when the Raptors win the NBA title on Thursday night. Okay, there's a prediction. We'll see what happens. As mentioned, I'll be back on 6 to 10 on Thursday and Friday of this week. So looking forward to that. Hey, Dan, we had an opportunity earlier to catch up with our buddy Adam Beasley, who is out in Oakland covering different. He's not covering the finals. He's covering the Raiders and going down to L.A. to do some stuff on the Dolphins. So when we come back, we'll have that interview for you. Appreciate everybody who texted in, everybody who tuned in. Dan, great job by you as well. Adam Beasley joins us next.
Mention that I'm in the Oakland airport right now. I'm about to board a flight. I'm going down to Orange County, checking out the Chargers tomorrow, and I'm looking at one of those newsstands. You know, they sell newspapers, sodas, chips, and nothing but Golden State Warriors gears adorning the front of the store, including one of those little neck roll things you use to sleep on the plane. So if you want me to bring you back some Golden State souvenirs, I'm in the right place to do it, Craig.
Okay. I think you and I are both on the same page about how we feel about that. But
I just want to put the offer out there.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. So real quickly, since you were at Raiders camp today, didn't Richie Incognito, did you get you got a chance to see him then?
I saw him, did not get a chance to talk to him. He has been a member of the Oakland Raiders now for 2 weeks, and he is yet to be made available to the media. I was hoping to talk to him today. It's a swing and a miss for me, but yeah, I think he may talk later on this week. I did get to see him practice a little bit, and it's funny. Different color jersey, same number, same build, same. It's Richie. I mean, it's funny. John Gruden was asked about him a bunch of times, including by me today, and he said, "Well, when Richie decided to stop playing, he wasn't a good player. He was a great player. He was a Pro Bowler, and they think they can get that back at age. What is he now? 36, maybe." And a lot more over the dam, so to speak. I don't know if he'll be that same player. Taking football and certainly all the issues he's had to work through may have taken his toll. But in the very, very brief time that I laid eyes on him today, he looked like the same old guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think everything you need to know is in that quote that you just mentioned from John Gruden, because you know, it's the same old story. If you're talented, even if you're troubled, they'll take a chance on you. And Richie Incognito has gotten plenty of chances, including now in Oakland with the Raiders. Okay, so you mentioned the Golden State Warriors gear in the airport. Obviously, Kevin Durant's likely torn Achilles has been the story from Game 5, even more so than the actual outcome. I feel terrible for him. Where do you reside on the debate about trying to place blame for his injury?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Kevin Durant's a grown man. And I know he's probably getting some pressure internally. He was definitely getting pressure externally to play. But at the end of the day, he's a grown man and had a responsibility for his own actions. So, yeah, I have sympathy for him. I certainly feel bad that, you know, it came to that. But do I think it's the GM's fault? Do I think it's Steve Kerr's fault? Do I think it's his teammates' fault? They may have put the idea in his head to play and rush back a little too soon. At the end of the day, Kevin Durant knows the lay of the land. He's 30 years old. He's a multiple-time MVP, multiple-time NBA and Finals MVP. He at some point asks us to push back and say no if he doesn't feel ready. And by all accounts, I don't think we've heard from Kevin himself, but all accounts, he thought he was ready to go, and sometimes these things happen in life.
Yes, I'm with you. Although we've heard now Charles Barkley came out and is criticizing the Warriors, saying they should protect the player from himself, all this other stuff. But I tend to agree with you on that, Bees, that, you know, at the end of the day, if it's Durant's call. Like, you know, there's a certain process where if medically they rule him out, then he doesn't have a control over that. But if he's cleared and he still doesn't feel comfortable with playing, heck, Kawhi Leonard spent almost an entire season on the sideline in San Antonio because he didn't feel comfortable coming back. So we've seen guys do it before. That's not the finals, and there's a lot of pressure, but I do think that there's a lot of factors there, and Durant ultimately had the final say. With that being said, how confident are you now in Toronto's ability to actually close this thing out?
Oh, not at all. I mean, last night was their moment. You know me, I was sound asleep midway through the third quarter, even out here on the West Coast. But, you know, watching the highlights, reading the recaps, you got a six-point lead at home with 3 minutes to go, championship right there for the taking. And you blow it, you score 2 points the rest of the way, that's your moment. I mean, I don't think anyone would be surprised if Golden State comes out and plays great on Thursday and wins on their home court. They haven't won on their home court yet this series, right? They lost both their home games. They're not. I can't see them going 0-3 at home in the NBA Finals. They're going to probably win Game 6. So then it's Game 7. And I'll ask you, Greg, who do you like in Game 7?
I mean, I agree with you that Game 6 likely to go the Warriors' way, and then Game 7, I mean, that's a crapshoot, man. I mean, you go from the Raptors having all this momentum, clearly controlling the series, to then the pressure squarely on. They do have an advantage of being at home, but I'm with you. If you're talking about championship medal and experience and the momentum of the Warriors staring down a 3-1 deficit and turning into a winner-take-all one-game scenario, you have to think Golden State feels really good about it. And a lot of people will feel that they have the best chance to win a Game 7 scenario.
The way they came back last year against the Rockets, and I know Durant was healthy and played in that series, but, you know, facing, you know, imagine the recriminations there would have been last year if they would have lost the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. They didn't. They rose to the occasion, won the last two games, and advanced in the NBA Finals. Even after the 3-1 debacle to the Cavs, they came back and steamrolled Cleveland the next year. They have it, man. They know how to put together championship-level play at championship-level times. And that's why I would not – Toronto's got to be sick to their stomachs today. We saw how Drake left the floor and kind of was having a hissy fit and nearly on the verge of tears after the loss last night. He's got to be the emoji for all of Toronto Raptors fans and maybe even the organization because, I mean, last night was their shot. And again, they're going to get another home game. They lose on Thursday, and I understand that home teams usually win Game 7. But you just mentioned it, and I couldn't have said it better. A championship pedigree that they have in Golden State, it's going to be tough to beat them. I really do think it's going to be tough.
And it sets up perfectly for the NBA. They love all this. A potential Game 7, this is perfect for business if you're the league. Adam Beasley joining the program here, of course, covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. All right, Bees, let's get to the Miami Dolphins. You have produced a lot of great content over the last week or so, courtesy of the Miami Herald. And you tweeted that Devontae Parker was the Dolphins' best offensive player in the offseason workout program. You have an article to complement that as well. Where have we seen this before, I would ask you? Because I'm concerned, Bees, that this is like a recurring theme with Devontae Parker. He looks great when it doesn't matter. And then when it does matter, where is number 11?
I feel like Charlie Brown, you know, charging the football and Lucy's just about to yank it away and I'm going to fall on my ass. I mean, I feel like that's what's going to happen here. But I am going to be that guy and say Devontae looked really, really good. I mean, like the best receiver the Dolphins have good. And I know we had Albert Wilson wasn't out there and Kenny Stills has been a little banged up. But he has been consistently their best offensive player this spring. And you mentioned, you know, deja vu all over again. Well, yeah, we've said this, seems like two or three times before, and it hasn't translated. And so the question is, why is this year different? I mean, he is, you know, seven-time gold medalist in the underwear Olympics, it seems like, you know, but you put those pads on and something changes. Well, here's what could be different, Greg. He's playing for a new coach that clearly has some level of trust in him in a way that Adam Gase didn't. Because the Dolphins could have easily just walked from Devontae. No, instead they decided to restructure his contract. He did take a pay cut, but they kept him on for one, if not two more years to prove himself. That, to me, it shows that Brian Flores wants him here, that he thinks that he can flourish here, and he can be a good, really good player for the Miami Dolphins. So that's number one. Number two, maybe Devontae will actually get lucky for once and stay healthy. Not, no player in the NFL is completely healthy throughout the season. Everyone's got something to deal with. But he's been snake bit. If it's not the foot, it's the ankle, it's the hamstring. Just the litany of injuries he's dealt with. Maybe he's due some good karma. Maybe, you know, whatever he did in his past life that the gods are taking out of him, maybe that the stuff is clear now and he can go ahead and have a good NFL career. And point number three, Greg, why I think this could be different, is look who's throwing the football. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Devontae Parker already have a chemistry. It was very clear with 260-plus-yard bombs the last day of minicamp, and we don't know if Fitzpatrick or Rosen's going to be the starter, but if it is Fitzmagic, I mean, we saw in Campbell last year, that guy can sling it. He's going to throw it to the wrong team a lot, but he can throw it to his own team a lot, too. And he maybe Jay Cutler has kind of had that same mindset, but I don't think Devontae's really had a quarterback who's just let it rip and could throw the ball downfield the way that we've seen Ryan Fitzpatrick do. So I think personnel-wise, he's set up to succeed as well. Those are the three reasons why I think it could be different. If it will be different, I'm still going to, I'm going to hold my fire on that. Wait till they get in the pads and training camp. If he emerges from training camp healthy, productive, then yeah, I'm all on board the Devontae Parker train.
All right. I mean, it sounds good, but I need to see it to believe it after all these other tease jobs we've had from him. Now, you just mentioned Fitzpatrick and Rosen, and this is a really, really fascinating dynamic, not only because it's the biggest storyline for this team, but also it does feel like there are certain members of the media, colleagues of yours, that have already decided Ryan Fitzpatrick is the starter. I would ask you, though, because I think it's way too early to say that, where do you reside there? I mean, are we going to see a legitimate competition come August when training camp rolls around?
I'll say this. If Josh Rosen was as far ahead of Ryan Fitzpatrick as Fitzpatrick is ahead of Rosen, I would call it, because there's all the upside in starting Rosen. So I still think they're going to grade this thing on a little bit of a curve. If they're close, they have all the incentive in the world to play Rosen to see what he's got this year. But right now, it's not close, Greg. I mean, there's a gap between the two. And Fitzpatrick was really, really good in the practices we saw. I think we saw five or six practices over the course of the spring. And every one of them, he was the best quarterback on the field. But again, like Devontae Parker, where have we heard this before? I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I mean, he's been in the league 17, 18, 23, 34 years, whatever it is. He knows every offense in football. He knows how to throw the no-look pass, which was great. We saw on Dolphins social media. But can he put it together consistently? And so even if he does, Greg, win the week one starting job, history suggests that he's going to have multiple hiccups. He's going to have a 3 or 4 pick game. And if he has enough of those early in the season, the Dolphins start out 2-5, 3-6 even. There's all the incentive in the world to play Rosen down the stretch to see what they have. So my guess is this, both are going to play at some point, either because of injury or ineffectiveness. The question is who gets that week one start. I'm not ready to call it at this point. I certainly know Brian Flores isn't ready to call. We haven't seen a single snap in the preseason. We haven't seen anything with pads on. But Rosen, who I'm going to go down and see if I can talk to some of his people this week, he's got his work cut out for him. My guess is he knows he has his work cut out for him to win that starting job.
Yeah, it's going to, I think still the story is to be written, but I'm with you. Like, I understand Fitzpatrick's well ahead at this point, and looking forward to seeing what you find out in L.A. Adam Beasley's joining us here, covers the Dolphins, of course, for the Miami Herald. All right, I got to admit, I cringed when I read Minkah Fitzpatrick's quotes in your article regarding the communication or lack thereof from the previous coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball. I guess first thing is, does that tell us all we need to know about how things operated under the previous regime?
Whew. Well, it certainly gives us, I don't think it forgets what Rashad Jones did, but it certainly explains a little bit what Rashad Jones did, because there wasn't an outpouring of respect, I would say, for Matt Burke in that locker room. And Minkah, he isn't a look-at-me kind of guy. He is, I mean, he'll give you an honest answer, but he's not trying to showboat. He's not trying to show anyone up. And for him to essentially take a blowtorch to his defensive coordinator like that, I don't have the exact quotes up, I don't, maybe you do, but essentially it was, I feel like even though I can't focus on one position this year, I want to be so much better. because we're not going to be making it up as we go along.
Right.
And that's essentially what he said Matt Burke did. Like, it would change day to day what they thought his role would be, not game to game, but like midway through the week, he suggested they would just scrap plans and go another way. And that's really hard for a rookie, man. I know he played a lot of different positions at Alabama, but he's still about 22, 23 years old at that time. And he's playing against by far the best competition he's ever seen in his life. So cut the dude a break. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's very telling as to what went wrong. There are a lot of things that went wrong over the last 2 years. But more than anything, I don't think the coaching staff, the past coaching staff, maximized the players they had. I don't think they had great plans for their skill sets, and I don't think they utilized them in a way they should. So, it's if I was Matt Burke and I read those comments, I wouldn't feel particularly good about myself.
No, and I'm with you there. And I think that my other takeaway, at least I'm trying to be optimistic about all this, Bees, because there's been plenty of negativity over the last decade or so with the Dolphins. But I'm hoping, and I actually feel pretty confident, that the new coaching staff will utilize Minka in different ways, but also maximize what he can do and really get the best out of him and his versatility.
No, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of guys they're going to do that with. And, you know, Bob McCain might end up playing safety because it's the best way to utilize his skill and get everybody on the field. And maybe, you know, I don't know, Kenyon Drake will be utilized in the right way, getting him the ball in space. I don't know if you needed him to be a volume back, but certainly the way, you know, don't run it up the middle and you know, crash your head into the line when you've got breakaway speed. There are a lot of different players that have not flourished. Charles Harris, another perfect example. He was a 3-point stance guy, 4-point stance guy his entire career, and has had 3 sacks to show for it. Maybe stand him up and let him get in the space, come and go, and see what you get out of him. It's all good stuff, man. I think there's the makings of a pretty good nucleus already on this roster. The issue is, you know, adding to that nucleus because they're not nearly close enough yet, and developing those players they have. And the last couple of years have kind of just been, you know, hamster wheel. You're running really hard, but you don't get anywhere with them.
That's for sure. All right, I'll leave you with this, Bees, and I appreciate your time as always. The NFL has announced tonight that Hard Knocks will be chronicling the training camp of the Oakland Raiders officially.
Oh, how about that?
You were just there, and
that was the topic du jour. They were peppering John Gruden about it. He was cursing out his brother Jay for lobbying for the Raiders to get it. He probably knew. I'm sure he did know. He had a good poker face letting the league announce it. Look, I mean, the characters that are on that team are just great. I mean, AB is going to be a star. I'm sure they're going to go down the Richie path like they did when the Dolphins had it in 2012. They're not the best team in the NFL, but they're certainly one of the most interesting. I'd say they and Cleveland are the two most interesting teams. And the Browns have a new coach, so they don't have to do Hard Knocks. It made sense with the Raiders. The only reason I would have, you know, pumped the brakes on Oakland this year is because next year when they move to Las Vegas, could you imagine the glitz and glamour that's going to be at training camp? You know, beggars can't be choosers. I'm definitely going to tune in because I got to see handles those personalities because there are some massive personalities in that locker room.
Oh, man, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm with you on that completely. Hey, Bees, thanks so much for the time, as always. Safe travels out in California, and we'll catch up with you again when you're back in South Florida, all right?
Sounds good, bud.
All right, there he is, Adam Beasley, joining us from out in the Oakland Bay Area, not covering the NBA Finals, but instead covering some mini camps on the West Coast. Appreciate his time, as always. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at Adam H. Beasley, and read his work in the Miami Herald.